Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Yo, what's up? Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We're going to have a couple guests for you. Ryan Abraham, Clinton Yates are going to stop by today. Stay tuned for that. They're happening in the first hour of the show. It's all brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data, 2G for $45 a month, saving you half the cost of big carriers. No contracts, no compromise. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. So I got a number of things that we're going to discuss here, but let's start with the NBA, okay? So I know that some of you may be freaking out a little bit about the NBA because Woj put out some tweets yesterday about a small group of players having actual concerns about going and playing in Orlando, and it's basically some uncertainty among NBA players about entering the bubble and allowances that the league plans to make for those deciding to stay home, et cetera, et cetera. So there are a couple of, I mean, I guess if I had to put a number on it, 40 players out of 450 that are worried about a number of different things. It's not all the same thing. Some are worried about the safety protocols. Some are worried about having to be there 2-3 months potentially without seeing their family for at least the first 7 weeks. Some are worried about their own contract status. And about, hey, man, like, this is a wacky start and restart, and my extension is coming up, or my free agency is coming up. What if I get hurt here? What kind of assurances do I have? This isn't a normal situation. Why do I need to suffer? What if I get hurt? How does that change things? And look, valid concerns. All of them. All of them. The safety, the family, the isolation, the money. All of those are valid concerns. I'm not trying to dispute that. But what I would try to tell you is this, that it is the 11th hour, and it is a very small group of players, as I mentioned, probably like 30 to 40, that have these concerns. And again, not trying to dismiss their concerns. But the overwhelming majority of NBA players are ready to roll. And the overwhelming majority, clearly of the ownership, are ready to roll, as they voted 29-1. To move forward. So to my understanding, okay, this thing is a go. And if guys don't want to play, as Woj just stated, then they don't have to show up. It's just as simple as that. And I think that there are some things, though, that you're going to have to deal with. If you don't come to Orlando, here's what Woj said about not showing up to Orlando.
Union and the league, you know, have essentially agreed on a plan that if players don't want to go to Orlando, they will not have to go. They will not be punished by their teams. Now, they will also not get paid for those missed games. And if there's a player who has a medical question, perhaps is of high risk in that environment or of getting COVID and becoming ill, there'll be an independent medical process for the player to go through, and then he could possibly be excused from it. And even if he's told that he's fit to play, he can still stay home again and do so without getting paid.
So you don't show up, you don't get paid. You got an excused absence and a note from a doctor, kind of like when you were in school, you can probably get paid. End of story. So the other concerns about maybe being there too long. What is Woj hearing about that?
I think it's really started to hit it home with a lot of players and coaches and members of organizations of how isolating, how restrictive this bubble environment is going to be. And there are a number of players, I was told a few dozen, who have been talking. They had at least one conference call to kind of hash out some thoughts among each other. And listen, for a lot of players, there are family concerns. There are certainly concerns about COVID. There are concerns about a number of issues built around having to go inside that bubble, you know, many of them for 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 2.5, 3 months. You hear it more and more among the teams who know or certainly believe they're not really going there to compete to win a championship.
Sure. I get that the guys that aren't there to win a championship would be annoyed after a while. Hey, man, if you want to get paid, you're going to go. And by the way, even though it's a seven-game series, and over a seven-game series, historically, the better team generally wins, this thing is so wacky that you may see some strange things. You may see some underdog teams win because there's no home court advantage. Like, I don't think that players are thinking that stuff through enough. Like, you may see, I don't think you'll see it overwhelmingly, but you may see an upset. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. So I would just say that those players have probably the wrong mentality going into this thing. And I'll tell you this, I have personally reached out to some teams to ask them, hey, are any of your players on this in this group of 30 or 40? And the majority have said, nah, our guys are good to go. So again, the overwhelming majority want to play. And look, man, if you're worried about isolation, if you're worried about the restrictive nature of the bubble environment or the campus environment, then you don't have to come. But clearly it's not any of the superstars, because we would have heard that and names would have been attached. And again, it sounds like to me that it's teams that don't have a real shot to compete for a championship. So I think that, not that they're trying to be insensitive, but my guess is if I were the league, I'd kind of shrug my shoulders and be like, hey man, you're either in or you're out at this point. Because we did this as a democracy, and the overwhelming majority of your fellow players want to do this. And the owners are in. So, you know, again, we're not going to force you to do anything that you don't want to do, but here it is. Like, it's time to make a decision. And we're not going to hold it against you. Now, the teams, that's a different story. That's the league's perspective. And the league can try to enforce that. But if you're a fringe player and you're going to get cut anyway, or they're going to move on from you, or they're not going to re-sign, I honestly think that you not showing up, it's a risk. It's a risk for your future. Even if the NBA says they will try to uphold that law, it's really hard to prove against if you're just some fringe player, where an NBA team would probably cut you or move on or sign someone else to replace you anyway. So, again, I'm not trying to tell anyone what the hell to do. What I'm simply saying is understand the situation, much like I told the Major League Baseball players. Read the room. But again, you don't want to go? No, I'm not going to knock you. I get it. But understand that even though the league is saying there aren't any ramifications, it's going to be hard to prove otherwise that teams aren't going to move on without you. Because let's face it, they probably would have anyway. So, not an easy decision. But if it were me, I'd go. I'm just telling you what I would do. And I don't know about you guys. I'm sure that there are plenty of you out there that would do the same. As far as should you, the fan, be concerned that there's not going to be an NBA season now all of a sudden, that this thing is like, uh-oh, it's turbulent waters? No, I don't think you have to worry about that. To quote the great Aaron Rodgers, relax. It's going to happen. Speaking of it's going to happen, I am really proud of athletes in today's day and age. I grew up in an era where we documented it because we talked about The Last Dance a lot, where players didn't really get involved when it came to social issues. They were afraid. And we live in an era where guys are not afraid, and I love it. And we're seeing the seas of change. And LeBron James has been at the forefront of this, going back to Trayvon Martin. And he has supported certain political candidates because it's what he believes. And it's everyone's right to support who they want to support. Socially, politically, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's what this country is supposed to be founded on. The ability to have freedom of speech, the ability to have the right to assemble, all those things. And one of the big issues in this country has been voting. For example, in the last election, the last presidential election, what did we have? 120 million votes? It's 330 million people in the country. Now, granted, there's a lot of children there, but there's probably about 200 million that are eligible to vote. And we don't have close to, we have about half, basically, that are eligible that actually vote. And I think that voting has been made hard in some places, as we've seen and documented in the news recently. And it's not just recent, like clearly if you've seen it, this has been happening for decades and decades and decades and decades. So I want to congratulate LeBron James for his More Than a Vote, voters' rights, getting people ready to roll, getting people educated on the different issues, getting people educated on how to register to vote, whether you do it online, whether you got to do it in person, whatever you got to do. So I think that this newly formed nonprofit is great, and it encourages particularly minority voters, but particularly African Americans, to register and submit their votes in November elections, in their local elections, and so on and so forth. Because here's the thing. As a citizen of this country, you have the right to be heard. And it's not just him. He has got the support of a lot of different players from all different spectrums of the world of sports. A lot of NBA players, obviously, and some NFL players, including Carson Wentz, including Drew Brees, and including probably the best player in the NFL in Patrick Mahomes, who's a young man doing things that young people don't normally think about, but he's chosen, as we'll hear here in a second, to utilize his platform. Let's hear from Patrick Mahomes.
I think the biggest thing that I've done is just lean on people that I respect, who I believe done it the right way. And I've been lucky enough to grow up with a lot of great role models around me, and just trying to find and listen to them as they talk to me, and then other people around the league who I feel like I've done it the right way, and listen to the advice they give me, and then trying to make the best informed decision as far as what I do and the next steps I take to move forward. Because, like you said, I've been given this platform, and I want to make sure that I can do whatever I can to make the world a better place in whichever way that is.
Speaking of utilizing their platform, man, I got to give it up to NASCAR. What they did by banning the Confederate flag is the most significant in the sea of change in sports that we were just discussing. And I got to give it up to my colleague Ryan McGee, who covers NASCAR for us at ESPN. And he hosts the weekend radio show with Marty Smith very early in the morning here on the West Coast on, I don't know if it's Saturday or Sunday, but obviously it's on the weekends. And this is a guy who wrote, and you should check it out. I retweeted it on my Twitter account, at Sedano. It's Bomani Jones tweeted out the link, and I retweeted that. And Ryan McGee is a direct descendant of slave owners, and that his family still owns a home where his forefathers lived. And those human beings worked on that property. And he told the story. Like, man, this has got to be hard for someone to come out there and say, hey, man, my family was part of the problem. And here's just a short version of that story that he wrote as he told on ESPN Radio yesterday.
Back when Marty McGee was a podcast, and this was after the church shooting in Charleston, and the debate for the 9 millionth time came up about the fact that the Stars and Bars flew over the State House in South Carolina, you know, the Capitol building in Columbia, South Carolina. And we're both screaming to take it down. And people were like, you're betraying, you know, you don't understand. Yeah, I understand. I'm literally right now, I'm talking to you from the coast of North Carolina, just south of Fort Fisher. And I had direct family members. I'm a direct descendant of men who fought for the Confederacy at Fort Fisher, were taken prisoner of war, and sat in the Helmyra prison camp in upstate New York, and had to walk home to North Carolina. Was over with. So don't tell me about what that flag means. I know exactly what that flag flew over, and that's dead and gone. That is done. That should be in a museum, because my people were on the wrong side of the deal, and that's why they lost, and the right side won that thing. And so, we're talking about a war that happened so long ago. So I don't need any rednecks coming at me about heritage versus hate or whatever. I know exactly what they've done with that flag. And so that's why that flag should be on display in a museum to explain to my daughter's generation why that flag was flown, and it was on the wrong side of history. Simple as that. And listen, whatever, man. You and I both have been to plenty of events with stars and bars with Bo Cephas's face on it, right? Or Dale Earnhardt's number 3 on it. I get all that. Mm-hmm. Fine. That day's done. It's done. And what I say all the time is when I first started covering races at the Darlington Raceway in South Carolina in the mid-90s, there was a guy who sold Confederate flags with this folding table right at the entrance of the Winston Cup Series garage because he knew that's where all the fans would congregate to see race car drivers. I haven't seen that guy in 25 years. And so what I've told people is that when I used to cover races, there were hundreds of Confederate flags. I go to Daytona now, I might see a dozen big ones, maybe. And so it's not what it was, but they still need to go away completely. You want to see one? Fine. You know what? There are so many fantastic American historic museums around the nation where you can go see that and learn what it's about. But I don't need to see you flying it in my face because you think I don't understand what that flag was, because I understand it more than you do.
I mean, there you go. Like, that is as strong comes in that situation, okay? You're talking about someone who understands the history and his family lived it and is telling you, yeah, that thing needs to get the hell out of here. And look, it's no different than these statues that have been erected that are getting taken down, you know, as far as leaders of the Confederacy. It's wild, right? We have communities where they erect statues of slaveholders and not abolitionists. It's wild to me. Like, this is America. In Germany, LZ and I were talking about it earlier. You go to Germany, there's no Nazi flags. There's no Hitler statues. Get the hell out of here. You don't celebrate the losing team that wanted to, I don't know, keep slavery going? They don't do that in Germany. Why are we doing it here? But you know where they have it in Germany? In museums. Just like they can here. And in history books. Just like they can and do here. There's a proper place for that stuff. Okay? There's a reason for it. Because life moves on. And it doesn't mean that history didn't happen. You're not removing history. What you're doing is taking out something that stood for something that none of us should believe in and removing it and putting it in its proper place, not out in the public to remind people of the horrors that their ancestors went through. Nobody does that anywhere else. We're the only people that have done that. It's stupid. And I'm glad that NASCAR took that step. And I think it is the most significant thing we've seen in sports. All right. We'll get your thoughts on all that, on the NBA restart, on NASCAR, on LeBron, and his social movement on helping minorities vote. 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. Also coming up next, a guarantee from Major League Baseball. How much do you actually buy it, though? We'll tell you what Rob Manfred, the commissioner, said. Sit down with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Watch the new Shower Sessions videos at youtube.com/progressive. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Greg Bergman, were you afraid? Or were you very afraid of the NBA not coming back? Were you worried for a minute there?
No, I mean, I've seen some things that you were talking about it a little bit anyway, but I've seen some people saying that, you know, Matt Barnes was one of them, was saying that some guys are not really comfortable with it. I'm not afraid, though. I think everybody's going to come back, and I think by having star players on certain teams, especially here in LA, that want to be playing, that everybody else is going to play as well.
Look, LeBron and Kawhi want to play. So right. If other guys don't want to roll with them, the solution is there. All right. You don't have to play. You're not going to get paid, though. That's how it works. Simple.
Right. Yep.
And my guess is if you're LeBron and Kawhi, you can convince other guys to play. I don't think. Laura, were you worried at all about the NBA when some of that stuff was popping up yesterday?
No, it's just noise. Well, at least to me.
Right. It is 11th hour stuff. And again, it's just a very small group of guys that are actually in this group, right? 30 to 40 guys. You're talking about 450 players. So I just don't think it's a huge deal. So I do think the NASCAR thing is a huge deal, Laura, since we were just talking to you. Like, how does that resonate with you? You know what I mean? Like, you just hear it. I know you may not be a big NASCAR fan, but I just think the symbolism of it, I think, is huge.
No, I agree. I'm not a huge NASCAR person, but knowing what that meant to a lot of their fans and having them say it's not something that we're going to allow to fly here, that's amazing and a big step forward.
Yeah, I would agree. And Jimmy Johnson, I know that Marty Smith was on First Take, and he was on SportsCenter yesterday, and he was talking about Jimmy Johnson, along with Bubba Wallace, being the kind of the guys who really had, you know, started this thing, right? And, you know, Jimmy Johnson is, you know, in some ways, if you remember, he's kind of like the Tim Duncan Bergman of NASCAR, where, you know, kind of quiet, right? He wasn't like the sexy guy like Dale Earnhardt Jr. or even Jeff Gordon. You know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't have that kind of personality. He just kind of did his thing and won a lot. You know, so to have him kind of at the forefront, one of the winningest drivers ever, I also think was huge for this thing too.
Yeah, no, it's a big, big thing for NASCAR just because of how powerful he was in the sport. But this was, when I saw that happen yesterday, when NASCAR came out with their statement, I was shocked because I never thought that I would ever see that day. It's kind of like the Redskins in the NFL. You know that it's based upon racist things for Native Americans, but you just kind of figure it's never going to go away. That's how I felt with this NASCAR thing with the Confederate flags.
Yeah, it is interesting because you bring up the Washington Redskins, and what I would say to you is this, is, you know, there are clearly other teams that are named after Native Americans, the Chiefs, right? The Braves. And those names just alone are not slurs. You know what I'm saying? Whereas just go look up the definition of Redskins. It is. It's a slur. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there's no if ands, or buts about it. You know, so I don't think Daniel Snyder has been very staunch on not changing it. And, you know, whatever. That's the NFL's prerogative. It's not mine. But it is what it is. But to your point, yeah, I think that the symbolism of it is really, really, really important. So, and the Ryan McGee story that we just played, that 2 minutes of audio. I mean, if you can't listen to that and come away feeling differently about it, then there's just no hope, right? For you to at least even be open to other possibilities and other people's thoughts on it, you know?
Right. And it was an incredible story, and he's absolutely right. I mean, if he has a daughter and he wants his daughter to grow up in a nation that understands its past, but knows how it's supposed to be. Go to a museum like you guys have been talking about. That's totally fine. But for the fact that he came out and being a direct descendant of slave owners and coming out with it, that's powerful.
Yeah, no, there's no question about that. All right, 877-710-ESPN. We'll get to the calls here in a second. So Major League Baseball, Laura, if you've got the Rob Manfred sound, I'm going to tell you which one to play. So yesterday was the MLB draft. Did you watch the MLB draft, Bergman, at all or no?
I've never watched one MLB draft in my life, and I wasn't going to start yesterday.
Right, I wasn't either. It just happened to come on right after SportsCenter while I was watching it. So I did stick right around to watch like the first four or five picks.
Wow.
And I was just like,
more power to you.
Well, it wasn't like I was sitting there intently watching it. Like, I was doing other things while it was on. But I was like, yeah, whatever. I'll just listen to hear what they think. Because I figured, first of all, baseball is such a hard thing. Like not every first round pick, you don't nail those. I mean, even in the NFL, 50% of them fail. In baseball, the percentages are way higher of failure. But I was curious, right? Because everybody was talking about this one kid, this Spencer Torkelson. Or Torgensen, excuse me, from Arizona State. So I just was curious to see what kind of player he was. I never watched a second of him play. So just watching like the highlights and just seeing kind of his breakdowns and things of that nature. I found it interesting for a few minutes and then I was done. But anyway,
Have you ever heard of Bobby Miller? Do you know who Bobby Miller is?
I have no idea who Bobby Miller is.
Right. That's exactly. That's what the baseball draft is. That's the pick that the Dodgers took, and he's a pitcher that is supposedly has a, you know, 100 mile an hour, 2 feet seam fastball.
Yeah. I mean, right. Okay. Yeah. We'll
Means
see.
Nothing.
We'll see in 5 years, see where he's at. You know what I mean?
Like
that's basically what it is. That's why baseball's draft is not as interesting, because it takes 4 or 5 years in most cases to even see any of these guys potentially make it to the majors. But anyway, back to Manfred, which is more important. So Manfred was asked a number of things. And he basically said that he guaranteed that baseball would happen. Laura, play the one where it starts the most important thing. Let me hear that cut from Rob Manfred.
I'll be disappointed that we're unable to reach an agreement that allows us to play more games. But you know what? I think at the end of the day, the most important thing, and I'm not buying into your number of 48, the most important thing is that we play Major League Baseball in 2020, and I can tell you unequivocally we are going to play Major League Baseball this year.
100% unequivocally. He was asked the follow-up. What percentage? He said 100% unequivocally. Okay, he said before that. So, Bergman, are you feeling better about baseball?
No, I'm
what?
Not yet. I'm not.
Why not?
I don't, because I don't trust Rob Manfred in the slightest, and I don't think that he's going to do this correctly. And I think that even if it gets to a point where he's going to say, yes, you absolutely have to come back no matter what, I think it's going to be a watered-down product, and I think people are going to sit out.
Yes, I disagree with you, actually. I think he's going to invoke his commissioner clause, whatever he's got to do, and make them play games, I think, at worst.
And I think people are going to sit out. And I think that you're going to find guys that are going to be like, I don't care that you're forcing me to come back. I'm not going to come back. And that's fine. Don't pay me. But I'm not coming back to play in this. Because, like, look what they're doing. I mean, they're keeping them in their own ballparks. They're not even talking about the safety precautions. That was one of the biggest things with the MLBPA, with their proposal, was that there wasn't enough with the safety precautions. Why should these players come back to a sport that they don't feel safe in and they're being forced to play?
If they want to get paid.
Fine, but if you're not safe, look, the NBA has you in a bubble, right?
You know what? The reason they're not playing in a bubble is because of the players. So you can't have your cake and eat it too. If you're going to worry about safety, you should have played in Arizona or in Florida or in Texas or whatever bubble atmosphere they were discussing earlier.
I agree. They should have been doing that. I'm not sure why.
So then why? The players have no leg to stand on in that situation if they're worried about safety.
But they're not. There's no safety protocols that they're comfortable with yet until they actually have.
But they could have had play. They could have had safety protocols they were comfortable with. They refused them.
Just because they disagreed to the bubble doesn't mean that they said no to safety protocols. Those are two totally separate things.
No, man. No, it's not, Greg.
Yes, it is.
Greg, there's no way to make it safe if you're traveling, okay? There is no ifs, ands, or buts about this.
Right, but that doesn't mean that the safety protocols that they were going to have in place were up to the standards that they needed to have inside the bubble. They don't know. That wasn't all part of the deal.
They were going to have the exact same testing protocol that the NHL and NBA have.
However it's going to work, the fact of the matter is that if they're not feeling safe, then there's no reason for them to be playing. And
and that's fine. If you don't feel safe, don't go. But don't come to me at you don't feel safe when you could have played in a bubble environment, which by far, according to all the experts, is the safest way to do it.
Oh, yes, of course it is. That's why it makes so much sense for the NBA to be going to Orlando. It's just what baseball is doing. It doesn't make sense to me. You still have to fly to Seattle and Colorado or wherever it is that you have to
go. But that's their own fault. That's their fault. They chose that, the players.
And these are the reasons that are happening that makes it so that I have worry that baseball is not going to return. And
okay,
even if it does, if they force it for 48 games, that's not even a season. That's ridiculous. I'm sorry. I will watch because I love baseball and I want to watch baseball. But this is it's an absolute nonsense of a year if that is that what's going.
It's a nonsense of a year, but I'm going to watch every second of it.
Well, because I'm a baseball guy, but there's going to be a lot of people that don't. I love baseball. I'm going to watch because I want to see the Dodgers win a World Series. No, don't. Oh, come on. It's true.
Yeah. Speaking of come on, Starfish and Coffee. And by the way, if this came across this way, I apologize. But he says, come on, Sedano, give credit where credit's due. Bubba Wallace is leading this charge. He's the only black driver in the NASCAR Cup Series. And it is his words that are making a difference. There's no question that's the case. We've talked about this, you know, during the week already. Like, and I said, besides Bubba Wallace, it's no different than when we talked about the protests. I've said constantly for 2 weeks, if you are white, Hispanic, Asian, Middle Eastern, Pacific Islander, you need to step up to help our black brothers and sisters. And that's what Jimmy Johnson did for Bubba Wallace. He is the most decorated driver in NASCAR. And Bubba Wallace absolutely led the charge. But the charge would not be complete if Jimmy Johnson wouldn't have been like, yeah, he's bleeping right. What the bleep are we doing here? White people, Hispanic people, Asian people, Middle Eastern people, anyone who's not black needs to help black people now. And Jimmy Johnson helping black people, helping Bubba Wallace, who is the only black driver, absolutely is a big reason for this. Is it the biggest reason? No, I said it's a big reason. I said he's part of the impetus. So Starfish and Coffee, I love you. Thank you for being a loyal listener. But if it came across that way, I apologize. But again, I said part of the impetus. That's not discounting Bubba Wallace. And again, if it did, if it came across that way, I'm sorry. That's not by any means what I was saying. But it is consistent with what I've said all the last 2 weeks. We need to help our black brothers and sisters. And good on Jimmy Johnson for helping Bubba Wallace. All right, let's go to the phones real quick. Because we have Ryan Abraham of, what is his website, Bergman? I'm sorry.
USCfootball.com.
USCfootball.com. So he's going to join us in a second. And we'll talk Reggie Bush with him. Because there's some interesting things about the Reggie Bush stuff that I want to know. Alex in Ontario. Alex.
Yo, what's up, man?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, I have a question about the bubble. So my thing is, how is anybody infected going to get in the bubble? If the bubble's clean and everybody gets tested before in there, how is it possible for people to actually come up with the virus if they're in the bubble, unless they have some foul play and they sneak out or whatever and contaminate it?
Okay, well, in the NBA, the teams are going to arrive there on July 7th. The games will start on July 30th, it looks like now. So they're arriving there early to allow people to get tested and quarantine if necessary. The challenge becomes when people arrive, there's going to be interactions, right? Like you're going to see other teams, other players, you know, things of that nature. You're going to be arriving there. Even in your training camps, you may get some of that. So, but once you arrive in Orlando, there's going to be an influx of people in different teams and different people from the league and perhaps some media members, right? So I think that that's what they're worried about, which is why they want people to get there early to avoid it being an issue during games. Cool. I hope that answered your question, Alex. All right, Ryan Abraham, USCfootball.com. Is that, I get that right, Greg?
Yep,
I didn't hear
sure
you.
Did.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
USCfootball.com. All right. He's going to join us in less than 2 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, like Ryan Abraham of USCfootball.com, giving us the straight talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Ryan, thank you so much for taking the time. What was your level of surprise that Reggie Bush was welcomed back to the family?
Yeah, we've been hearing that, George, that it was going to happen, we thought it would be soon. We didn't think it would be the exact day, 10 years to the day when USC got those sanctions. But it just shows what the USC Athletic Department listened to what the fans wanted. They all wanted Reggie Bush back. And so I think that was really good on USC's part to come out there and, put that out, have a Zoom call, really make a big deal about welcoming Reggie Bush back to the Trojan family.
Yeah, it should be great. What do you know as far as, and granted, obviously right now is not the time, because for numerous reasons, as we all know, but what are you hearing as far as the ability to, I guess, celebrate him again?
Yeah, so it looks like it's going to be wide open. I mean, the disassociation just seems so draconian. I mean, it's just so weird that you would say you're not allowed to associate with this player that was at your school for 3 years and did all these great things. So I'm glad they changed the rule a few years ago that it wasn't going to be a lifetime ban. It would only be 10 years. That's still too long, but it's good now. I think USC is completely embracing Reggie Bush. You expect to see his number 5 jersey again in the Coliseum where we saw before. They talked about, potentially trying to get his Heisman back, but that's, I think, something that's on the back burner now. This was really the first step that needed to happen, and I expect this year to have some kind of celebration at one of the home games. He was at the Coliseum last year when USC played Utah. Right. And they couldn't really make a big deal out of it because they were still disassociated. Now he'll be there. Maybe he can run out the tunnel and lead the team. We expect something like that to happen this year, but I think they're going to fully embrace him and bring him back. And he's still been a huge part of USC recruiting players. Even today, I talked to players just a couple weeks ago. They were 3 years old when he won the Heisman, and they still talk about Reggie Bush at USC. So he's had a big impact on the university over the last 15 years, even after he left.
Look, I'm with you, Ryan. I think of him in that generation, right, of like kind of the 90s and 2000s, right? Like I look at that 20-year era, and to me, he's one of five guys that I watched play in that sport and go, holy moly, that guy is different. And it's him, it's Tebow, it's Vince Young, it's Ed Reed, it's Charles Woodson. Those are like the five guys that I look at and go, wow. And to me, that Fresno State game is still iconic. Like, you see what he did, and it was a video game when you watch him. So, look, USC would be smart not only to welcome him back, and clearly they have, but I would say utilize him still as a tool because he is part of the media, because he's on television every week, and utilize him that way to help them and help the program move forward still.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And we've seen Mike Bone, the new athletic director, really reaching out to former players, and Matt Leinart was a part of this too. I mean, he was, you know, someone that was very much an advocate for bringing Reggie Bush back. We've had him on our shows talking to him, and he always was in favor of that. So I think this athletic department gets it. They want to embrace a lot of these former players, and just having Reggie Bush being, you know, on the sidelines for so long, now he can come back in. And I'm curious to see, you know, what they actually do. They're probably going to come up with some unique ideas of how they can get him in the fold and get him, you know, to help out the program. He's talked about that. He wants to do that. He'd love to get his Heisman back, but he also has talked about, I really want to help these kids now. And his name, image, and likeness stuff, he would have been like that list of five guys you mentioned, all of them iconic. They could have all made a ton of money on their own name, image, and likeness when they were in college. And yeah. I think he's going to be an advocate going forward if those rules change and these players now can actually make money on their own image.
Ryan Abraham, USCFootball.com, joining us here on the Sedano Show. You mentioned the Heisman. Do you have any idea what it would entail to try to start that process of getting his Heisman back?
Yeah, we got to talk to Mike Bone yesterday. He said they haven't really looked into that yet, but if it's important to Reggie, it's important to him. I think it is important to Reggie, and it's not an NCAA thing. It's really going to be with the Heisman Trust. Ivan Menzel talked to one of the members of the trust yesterday and said they didn't have a comment. I think that's where you're going to have to go. And it, you know, he's the only player to ever have done that. I'm sure there's players that have done much worse than whatever, you know, Reggie Bush was accused of. So I think that's going to be something that now he's welcomed back into the school. Most of the media feel that the how heavy-handed the NCAA was just over the top. So I don't think there's going to be any kind of like political explosion if they try to give him his Heisman back. So I think it looks like we're on that path. I don't know how long it's going to take, but I think it starts with New York and the Heisman Trust, and I don't see any reason why they would want to, you know, keep him from having that, and USC would get back to having their seven Heismans again.
Ryan Abraham with us here. Ryan, who have you talked to as far as maybe like his former teammates and just how excited they are to have him back in the fold?
Yeah, you see on Twitter, but I've talked to guys like Lawrence Jackson, Matt Leinart have talked to extensively about it, and everyone, you know, I've not talked to anyone that was like, yeah, this is, you know, I don't want to see this happening. I mean, they felt like it was so terrible that he was ostracized like that. And, you know, it affected his career too. I mean, he was able to go on and win a Super Bowl, but that was something that was hanging over his head. And you know, Mike Bone said, he certainly was, he was sorry about, everything that had happened. So I feel like this is a good step now. There's that NCAA, hurdle is now behind USC, and we'll see what these entities can do going forward. But yeah, I think it's going to be a really positive thing for Reggie. I think it's going to be a positive thing for USC and the fans. There's still some fans that, you know, that weren't happy with it, but I think for the most part, the fans have been on his side, and now we can see where they go going forward.
Ryan, last thing for you. What are you hearing as far as the resumption of the football season and them getting together and working out and practicing and things of that nature?
Yeah, most of the progress, I mean, it's been positive. Like, we've seen all the steps that you would need to take if you're going to try to have a season that starts on time, late August, early September. And the NCAA was saying the right things. I think the Pac-12, which maybe people are a little apprehensive about what they would do, they said, hey, you can start June 15th, which is only in a couple of days. Now, the California schools, we don't know for sure yet. We haven't heard from them as far as here's when players are going to be allowed back on campus and here's when the workouts can start. But I think we're going to get there in the next week or so, because if you look at it, it's probably going to be safer for these players to actually be on campus and monitored than they would be everyone out in their own homes doing their own thing. It's just probably going to be a little bit slower with some of the California schools like Cal, Stanford, USC, UCLA. But I expect them within the next week or so to get there. And once they're on that path, you might start a camp 6 weeks before the start of the season and get everyone on the same page there and then start rolling. As long as there's not some kind of big setback, it seems like everyone I've talked to is optimistic that they'll be able to start on time. So crossing your fingers, we want to see a college football season happen, and they're going in the right direction for that to be the case.
There he is, Ryan Abraham, USCFootball.com. Check out his great work there. Ryan, thanks for the time as always, man. Stay healthy, stay safe. Appreciate it.
You too. Thanks so much for having me on.
You got it. Take care. All right, Clint Yates is going to join us. We're going to get into the Major League Baseball. We're going to get into Reggie Bush. We'll get into NASCAR, the NBA bubble, all that stuff with Clinton. He's joining us in 2 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Pennzoil Synthetic Motor Oils, made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Our friend Clint Yates joins us here for a couple of segments. Always happy to have him here on Thursdays.
What's up, kiddos?
We're good, buddy. So we were just talking during the break. Have you noticed how negative Bergman is today?
Bro, is this another no breakfast morning? Are you doing that late breakfast bit?
Oh, I haven't had breakfast yet this morning. I didn't even think about that.
Identify your food sources. Identify your food sources before you identify your emotions, and you'll know where everything's coming from.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Like it's because Laura did say he had coffee, so I was kind of wondering where the negativity was coming from. Like I asked him just very simply about baseball, and he just like went crazy on me. Like, he was like yelling at me. He was like, "This is insane." So
imagine sitting next to him for an entire National League. I don't know, championship series, in which the team he's rooting for is losing.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay. No, whoa. You enjoyed that, first of all. We had good conversations. And while your team was losing, you ran away.
This is where we became friends. So I'm really just messing around. But no, I've seen it and I love it. It's good to see you all.
It's a passion. There's passion there. All right. We'll get to some baseball stuff in a second. Let's start with NASCAR and then work our way to the NBA and some of the other stuff going on in sports. I think that NASCAR doing what they did is the most significant area of change we've seen in sports. What do you think?
You mean since 2020? Because you could almost say, as far as civil rights and sports.
Well, no, I'm talking about right now, in recent events.
Let me finish. You could almost say that in terms of civil rights and sports and like non-specifically political moves in what I'll just call the cable television era, that it's not going to get much bigger than this, you know? Like, let's be actually real about what we're talking about. This was the last major market mainstream bastion of any credibility at all that was still allowing this nonsense to not only exist, but thrive
right
in their culture. Don't undersell how big of a deal this is just because you think it's only a bunch of hillbillies and yokels who like the sport. There's a reason why those are the people showing up to the daggone infield, because nobody else wants to play that game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I got a column about this coming out later on The Undefeated later today. I'll explain it all. But basically, here's the deal. You got to find a way to grow. You can't grow when you're flying the stars and bars. And it's amazing to me, quickly, that in the 10 weeks since Kyle Larson, who, by the by, was a member of the Drive for Diversity program within NASCAR, dropped an N-bomb on live television, that they've accelerated, pun intended, all the way to the point of the Confederate flag getting removed from their properties and their events. It's amazing. It is truly amazing as a black person in America to see that happen on that stage.
Yeah, I thought Ryan McGee, have you read the Ryan McGee story?
Absolutely. Ryan was on the show yesterday with me and Mace. I mean,
Good.
Yeah, we had him on and he talked about it. And he said flatly, I never thought I'd see it in my lifetime.
Right.
That's Ryan.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Whose lifetime and many lifetimes involve exactly the history of the Confederacy. For him to say that, I was shocked. I mean, I was staring at a wall literally for about 5 minutes yesterday just thinking, wow, that's not where I expected any of this to go this quickly at all. And it did. Shouts to Bubba Wallace.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Shouts to Bubba Wallace and shouts to all the NASCAR drivers too. You know what I'm saying? Like, because they had, look, it's no different than when we were talking about the protests, right? Like, everyone has to pitch in, right? Everyone has to be able, because it's, look, it's more impactful if everyone from different backgrounds and ethnicities and colors are coming together and saying, yeah, this is ridiculous. This is wrong. We need to change this. It's more impactful that way because it's harder for those that are fighting against it to not see kind of the wave coming crashing on them.
I agree. And impactful is a great word because what's folded into impactfulness is effectiveness. Mm-hmm. And that's what it comes down to, is that people got to understand what works, not just what makes them feel good. It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. So let's move on to the NBA here real quick. So were you worried at all when some of these Woj bombs were coming out about a faction of, 30, 40 players were a little worried about, different things. Some guys were worried about the safety protocols, which is fine. Some guys are worried about the family situation and being away for 7 weeks at minimum from their family. Other guys are worried about maybe their contract status, right? Because guys have deals up or coming up or extensions coming up. And what if they get hurt? There's a lot of different reasons for guys having concerns. But it does seem like a very small group. The overwhelming majority of players seem to want to come back. I've even reached out personally to players and teams and things like that. And I've gotten a lot of, yeah, we're all in, we're good. So were you in the slightest worried at all that the NBA all of a sudden was in a turbulent situation?
I don't know that I was worried, but I also wasn't surprised. I mean, I don't want to make this too myopic, but that bubble situation affects everybody.
Right.
And all the reasons you just listed, George, are all ones that seem to be ones of concern. But there's also a reasonable amount of people who I presume just kind of don't want to do that. Like, between everything health concern wise, between where the country is, between the frankly rather onerous position that you're going to have to be in if this is something you can sort of, I don't know, afford not to do, some dudes just like, nah, I'm good, you know?
Right.
And we're talking about 3.5 month quarantines for people who just have to cover the daggone thing. If you're playing for some team who you get zero run and you don't expect your team to go anywhere, and you've got, for lack of a better term, something better to do, you know, and I know that sounds ridiculous because people tie duty to job and all this other stuff, but I mean, they're really just playing basketball, you know, and it's kind of a weird thing like that. Like, it's kind of just a big enough hassle that I would not be surprised if a lot of people come up with a lot of reasons not to do it because it's not worth their time. And that's a really weird thing to think about when you're talking about making millions of dollars. But when you fold in the safety risk, you fold in the possibility of winning, this doesn't surprise me at all. Not a bit. And the question becomes whether or not the NBA is going to start pressing people on their reasons not to be there. That would be a bad move, in my opinion. Just take who all will come,
yeah,
operate with the product you have, and make sure that you keep a positive vibe, because we don't need to be ostracizing or otherwise highlighting people who aren't there. That is not a positive message, and that's not where the NBA needs to be right now.
Right, and I understand their positioning on just, hey, look, you know what? If you're not going to be here, that's cool, but we're not going to pay you for the regular season games, and that's fine. And if you get a doctor's note, then we can basically, in essence, we'll pay you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get that part of it from a business perspective too, though, you know?
Yeah, I don't mind it. I mean, look, do I think they should be paid either way because the situation that befell them wasn't something that they could otherwise account for? Yeah, but that's a separate labor discussion. I'm saying, in the general reasonable response,
right,
if it's, hey, if you come up with a good excuse, we'll give you the money. It's not really about the money. We just don't want people walking and expecting to get paid because that's not really what we're about. I can see that. But overall, yeah, this is also just plain smart. You do not want people showing up who don't want to be there, because those will be people who do not comply with the various regulations,
yes,
in order to keep everybody safe.
So agreed.
It does not make any sense to have people there who aren't trying to be there.
Agreed. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We had a short segment here. We have a full segment with Clinton on the other side. I got a couple more NBA things I want to get to with you. And then we got to dive into Major League Baseball and Reggie Bush, because there's a lot there, yep, to unpack as well. So Clinton will continue with us. We're back in 3 minutes.